I'm Albert Lipte. I'm Director of Research for Stoller. I came there 5 years ago after spending 29 years at Ag Canada, the USDA counterpart in Canada. Jerry Stoller has worked for 37 years. He initially started working a lot with calcium and then with the minerals. And in the last 5 years since I came, we've essentially changed the company from just looking at minerals and hormones and small molecules to trying to identify the genes that are affecting crop productivity and then developing products that will enhance those genes and therefore enhance production. One of the One of the products that Jerry Stoller has developed is sugar mover, and this was a long process, probably over 2 decades. And in his initial concept was that when you have too much nitrogen, you have very lank growth, and it's important to somehow overcome that lank growth. So he developed products that he called NHIB, N for nitrogen. And then over the years, these were products were modified, and they were called nitrate balancers. And again, the idea is to overcome the lanky growth. And then finally, at the beginning of this decade, he came up with sugar mover. And just by having his consultants and salespeople do tests in a lot of different countries. We're located in 53 different countries worldwide. And so when I came, I implemented gene regulation studies, and we could then at that time work with a model plant called the Rabidopsis, for which about the 25,000 genes are known, and we could then identify the genes that we wanted to look at to see whether they were being affected. In fact, is sugar mover really moving sugar? So what I'll do is I'll just present to you the sugar mover on cotton results for 4 years. I'll talk about the mode of action of sugar mover in gene regulation. And then I'll just present a literature article which suggests that maybe one of the genes that sugar mover affects may affect initiation of trichome development, therefore fiber development, therefore cotton yield. And then I'll bring a summary. So these are the 2004-2005 results. This was in 16-acre plots done in Lubbock, Texas for Stephen Becton. We had 1,400 pounds of lint in the control, 1,652 in the sugar mover treated ones. These are all drip irrigated plots. In 2005, the control yielded 1,200 and the sugar mover 1,500. And in 2005, in the second field, 1,300 versus 1,700. Now, one of the things that we looked at was I saw that there was much more uniformity in the bulls along a branch. And so this picture is typical of the type of bull development you have along the branch if you put sugar mover on. It's relatively uniform right across the from the beginning of the branch next to the stem to the end. And this is just the numerical measurements of the diameter of the bull. If we look at the second bull for the control, the diameter had dropped 13% going from the first to the second bull. And then if we look at the third bull of the control, the diameter had dropped 23%. And then the fourth bull, 45%. In contrast, the sugar mover, the second bull was only 1.5% smaller than the bull next to the stem, main stem, 6.1 and 11.8. So what we're getting here is a much more even distribution of factors that can affect cotton bull development. Jerry Stoller insists and has started to insist about 15 years ago that we try to talk about everything we see in the plant in terms of the five main hormones, auxin, gibberellin, cytokinin, ethylene, and abscisic acid. And if one looked at the scientific literature, one would see that, and could extrapolate from it, one could see probably that what happens with the first bull is that the first bull concentrates all the oxen in it and prevents development of the bulls further along the branches. And so there's a struggle for the secondary, tertiary, and fourth bulls to develop as well. As if, when we apply the sugar mover, we tend to spread out the effects of the hormones. This is the 2006 data. This was done at Texas A&M with TX Lu. The control yielded 1330, and here we are trying to see whether, the applications of sugar mover are 6 weekly applications beginning at pinhead square. We tried to apply them a little bit earlier, and we seemed to get a little bit improvement in the lint yield, 600 versus 400 pounds per acre. So in this year, we did something a little different. We had our control. We had the sugar mover, the 6 weekly applications, but then we tried a sugar mover in furrow, 4 pints per acre. So in other words, one application to get away from multi-applications. The lint yield in the control was 900 and some, 1,400 for the sugar mover in furrow, and around 1,350 for the 6 applications foliar, or in the drip. So it didn't make any difference whether we put the sugar mover in the drip with a drip irrigation or foliarly. This first treatment, the sugar mover in furrow, 4 pints per acre, we got the idea when we had Cliff Coker in 2006 do a study for us on dryland cotton, and because we had seen work with a lot of nematologists and suppression of nematodes, we thought, well, okay, let's raise the rate of sugar mover from what we usually use as a pint per acre to 4 pints per acre and see if we can suppress the nematodes. His yield increase on dryland cotton was 500 pounds of lint per acre. Okay, so what are we doing to the quality? We seem to be reducing the micronair somewhat. None of these in a full replicate experiment are significantly different, but we seem to be reducing it at least numerically. The length seems to be increased a little bit. The uniformity seems to be increased, and the strength seems to be increased. Sugar mover is really a very complex product. The main components are boron, there's a little bit of molybdenum, a lot of other things. And it's a systems approach to trying to understand what is needed. And systems approach is essentially looking at energy, looking at substrates, looking at how things are regulated, and trying to understand what is happening in the plant, and therefore trying to maximize the focused thing that you want, whether it's in productivity, whether it's in quality or whatever. So this is a study that we done shortly after I came. We hired a molecular biologist, Dr. Ron Saltzman, who's at the Norman Borlaug Institute at Texas A&M College Station. He does the gene regulation studies for us. He uses DNA microarray analysis, RT-PCR, whatever else he needs to do. So one of the genes that is upregulated when we put on sugar mover is sucrose synthase, and is increased by about 87%. Now, this is one interesting gene because it relates, in the next slide, to fiber initiation, and therefore there's an important message there in regard to making sure that you have enough fiber development on your seed. The second gene that is upregulated, and this is upregulated by an awful lot of, this is 409% increase in amount of carbon transferred. The gene is upregulated about that much in this case, and it's upregulated less in this case, but there's an increase in carbon transfer from the leaves to the phloem. So that's a quite substantial increase in transport of the sugars from the leaves into the phloem. Then there's another sucrose transporter, is a transmembrane transporter. It's the amount of sugar is increased by 300%. This experiment was done using gene regulation studies and carbon-14, where we fed carbon-14 CO2 to the plant and then looked at the amount of radioactivity in various parts of the plant. And so because we appear to transport the sugars from the leaves to the stem and also to the seeds, the Salix and the Arabidopsis in this case, we also we seem to empty the leaves of sugar. And as a result, what we saw was an increase in the gene for Rubisco. And this was about a 60% increase in terms of the amount of sugar that was made. So in other words, our photosynthetic machinery is working 60% greater with sugar mover than the control. So the end result was also that we had Salix number increased, as well as the movement of the carbon-14 from the leaves to the stem and to the Salix. Okay, so this is the point I wanted to make earlier. And the reason I was making this point, I gave another talk and I on another product we have yesterday, and on that I focused on what is required for the fiber development, for the trichome development. And one of the basic things that is required is the hormone auxin, gibberellin also. But it appears that we also require enough sugar at the base where the trichome is developed, where the fiber is being developed. And this relates to this article by Nolte in 95, sucrose synthesis localization during initiation of seed development and trichome differentiation in cotton ovules and plant physiology. So there's maybe support for the work that we've done where we've looked at the various genes, and now hopefully we're trying to understand better what's happening in trichome initiation. What I would like very much to understand more is what is required from an agronomic point of view for trichome development. So I think that's one area that we still need to work on intensively and try to understand it better. Oh, okay, so basically that's it. I gave you the summary of 4 years of results, and in every case, whether we apply sugar mover as a multi-application or whether we apply it at one time in furrow, we get a fairly substantial improvement in productivity. Sugar mover sells for about $3.50 a pint, so your 4 pints would cost about $14. Sugar mover enhances cotton lint yield in drip irrigated cotton, whether applied in furrow, one time in drip beginning at Pinnett Square or foliar beginning at Pinnett Square for 6 weekly application. And sugar mover increases the sugar transport from the leaves, and that stimulates greater photosynthesis. Thank you.
Any questions?
Yes, sir.
Albert, have you looked at the sugar mover at different rates in the furrow rather than the
In cotton, we haven't. We have done that in soybeans. We've done that in corn. And 1 pint per acre gives you a little bit, and two pints per acre, and so on. One of the problems we have with in furrow is that there may be a little bit of toxicity to the germinating seedling. So one might think that we should maybe go, let's say, sideband or something like that. And this toxicity apparently only happens when we put other components in to reduce the ethylene stress in the seedling. And we haven't seen as much with the single product application. Another question?
Yes. I believe you're
Yes, that's correct.
Well, over 50% of soluble protein, we believe, is already in Rubisco.
Okay.
Do you really think we need more?
I don't know. All I'm reporting to you is the genes that are upregulated. And as we learn more,
is your photosynthesis at all?
No, we didn't. Okay. Good point. I thank you very much for the suggestion.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. One more.
Okay, there was one of the basic things is boron, but there are other components. Where is it? There it is. Now, boron helps in the shelf life of auxin. There's good evidence for that. Shelf life of auxin is important at higher temperatures or lower temperatures, according to Rapini working with them. There's a lot of factors that go on in terms of cell division, in terms of maybe trafficking of vesicles and whatever, that boron helps.
Did you check the level of boron and molybdenum in the soil? Are they on
level? No, this was the gene regulation studies were done in the lab.
The concentration of these two micronutrients in the soil, were they at the correct level? Mostly,
yes. We've done that many times over the years, and they're mostly within the range that you'd expect. Nearly all of our consultants always check the whole number of micronutrients and major nutrients, and usually they're at the correct levels. So you're asking me, if you go to southeastern California, what would happen to you? Yeah. You'd get necrosis.
Thank you very much.